Welcome to Breaking Bread with Jen. On today's episode, we have a guest who is known as the Lone Whisperer. Her name is Kia B. Hagens. And on today's episode, we'll be talking about breaking the chains, the promise of student loan forgiveness. Enjoy.
Kia?
Yes.
Oh my goodness. Yes. Welcome to Breaking Bread with Jen. How are you?
I am great. Thank you for having me.
And you're coming through loud and clear. Perfect.
Wonderful.
So, to do a little housekeeping to make sure that all of my listeners realize that you are definitely an expert on this topic, a self-ordained expert on this topic. I just want to speak on a little bit of background about you. Today's guest, as I stated, is Kia Barry Hagens. She has a bachelor's in education from the University of Michigan, a master's from the University of Michigan in educational administration and policy, and a Juris Doctorate of Law from Loyola University in Chicago. Did I get all of that correct?
Absolutely. Yep.
Great. And the last housekeeping that I want to do before we get into this conversation is that Kia is not representing any past or current employer. She is not representing any organization that she is a member of, including Delta Sigma Theta Sorority Incorporated, of which we both are members, the greatest sorority in the world. She's not representing any of that. She is representing only 100% herself on this podcast. Did I get that correct?
Absolutely. Thank you for the timer.
Yes. Now, we're here today to talk about not only student loans, but student loan forgiveness. How did millions of Americans get here with loans for college education? And why is there a history of forgiveness programs past and present? And the reason why I ask that question is because when I talk to people who are our parents' age or our grandparents' age who were fortunate enough to get college educations, they don't speak on student loans. So where did this whole thing about student loans, where did it come from?
Well, I think it initially came from the rising cost of education and the declining cost of salaries. So in my mind, our parents, for instance, that was the time that you could actually work in the summertime and pay for college. You could work in summer. If you hustled, you might be able to, you know, have a little extra money and you could pay for college. But when we went to college in what I call, my daughter's called the 1900s, but when we went to college in the 80s and 90s, you just couldn't do that. I remember very vividly, my master's at U of M cost $4,461 a semester. And I remember a fellowship through the Rockefeller Brothers Foundation that paid a set amount. And I could not pay for my tuition and my room and board with that set amount. And so it's the growth. And the income stayed stagnant. And so as our parents' income was growing slightly, it was outpacing itself. It was just outpacing itself for college. And I think it became, people began to realize that wanted to advance, you needed this college education. So more people were going. So now we can raise the prices. And if we raise the prices, less people can go.
Wow. Because, well, how the saying goes, yesterday's price is not today's price, because I went to undergrad at North Carolina A&T State University, and my parents were able to pay for that for me. But, and I don't know what the tuition was back then, but what it is now, I know my parents were not paying that.
Right, exactly.
I don't even have to have that conversation with them. I know they was not kicking out that type of money in 2024 back in the 1990s. Like, no. So, like, that is, like, wild to me how much education in America has inflated when people in general think that America is the land of opportunity. My thought processing is, after all these decades of education being afforded to some and not to all, and then we progressed from that, and now education, higher education, is afforded to all, why is the price still going up? Why is it not going down? Why is it not free?
Right. And it really isn't afforded to all, because technically, now, you know, when we were in college, maybe it was kind of like get a bachelor's degree. Now, you got to get a master's degree. You might have to get a doctorate degree.
You know,
outpacing itself. And I mean, if you look at historically, and I used to be a history teacher, so this is why this is important to me. The first college, Harvard, founded in 1636 versus the first Black college founded in 1837.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was years later.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. We were not able, like, tell me this, since we're kind of getting off track, but just tell me this. Between the 1600s and the 1800s, there were, though, however, in some of those all-white educational, higher education institutions, there were some Black people that were able to, you know, break that ceiling and get in. Like, maybe one person or two people. They were men. They were Black men. They definitely weren't Black women, but they were Black men during that 1600 to 1800 gap that were able to kind of get in there a little bit, correct?
Correct. And the funny thing about it, when you say it was one or two, it was probably like five or six, and three of them, you know, three of them they knew were Black, and the other three they didn't know.
Right.
But they definitely were men. And while it is a little off track, it goes to your second question that you were talking about in terms of loans and how we got here. Well, we got here because we have to get this education. We've outpaced this ourselves. And women and Black women and people of color in particular have to get this money to get this education.
Mm-hmm.
Because otherwise we can't get it. You know, the likelihood of a middle-class family coming out and having not just $20,000, but having $60,000 or $70,000 saved up by the time the kid is 18 is nearly impossible. I know, because I tried it. I'm doing this. Right. I'm in this world with my daughter going to college.
Right. Wow. Good thing, though, when it comes to... Now, tell me this, because I was going to put it on the student, but let's talk about the parent and fiscal responsibility, because I don't know. So you would have to tell me. When a parent applies for a student loan for their child, does credit score come into play, or are you just automatically, you've applied, so boom, you can get this money to help pay for your child's college education? Or do they look at your finances, and do some people get denied?
A lot of people get denied what they consider high income.
I didn't know that.
Yep. What they consider a high income is not very high. So they might consider, you know, you're outpaced at, well, I can use University of Michigan. You know, they'll say you can get free tuition if you don't make above $60,000. Well, the person who makes between $60,000 and $100,000, if they're living off of that money, which they are, they can't afford $45,000. If you're making $60,000, $70,000, and they expect a year, the math ain't mathing.
Right. Yeah.
That's not math. And so people get denied. They absolutely get denied. They've actually tweaked the system for the better, I will say. Because back in the 1990s, 1980s, you turned in paper documents. Now it's electronically filed, so you can't even dupe the system like people used to be able to.
Okay.
So that's the piece that's a barrier, because if you've not put in your taxes, you may have a problem getting FAFSA funding.
Okay. And still off topic, we're going to get back on track in a minute. But this has always bewildered me. How are some students graduating from high school with over $200,000, let's say, in scholarships? How are they doing that? Where are they getting all these scholarship monies from?
I think they're, first of all, I commend them for being hustlers. They're, when I say hustlers, they're hustling. They have grit. They're
Okay.
sitting down and doing that on a daily, probably a daily basis, because it's not,
Ooh.
I promise you, they probably have 5,463 arguments with their parents, because I tried it. And as you know, and
Yeah.
have all these other things to do, then we expect them to apply for scholarships. So they have ingenuity, they have grit. They a lot of scholarships go unclaimed. And so if you're, if your scores are high and your grades are high and there are three people who apply, then you can get those scholarships. We do still, and I noticed this for my children who are sophomores in college, they do still give more urban children, like a Detroit kid, has more possibility than
Okay.
a child that's a person of color in another area, which is fine,
Okay.
but it's that assumption that that kid needs it more than another kid. And so it's just a combination of pieces. And then there's
Wow.
good grades, good grades and ability to make sure to apply on time and all of that good stuff.
Okay. Now, I think I can only speak for what I know. I do know that back in the day, President Clinton had a loan forgiveness program that I participated in, where if you worked with a certain underprivileged population, once you graduated from college, every year up to 5 years, they would knock off some of your debt, some of your student loan debt. And I had student loan debt from grad school because, as I said, my parents paid for the undergrad, but I had student loan debt from grad school. And under this program with Bill Clinton, President Clinton, I was able to get $5,000 of that forgiven because I worked with a underprivileged population. So every year I had to turn in paperwork, and $1,000 was deducted off of my loan that I owed back to the University of Michigan. So fast forward, here we are in present day America, 2024, and President Joe Biden has this student loan forgiveness program that is turning people upside down, in and out. Either you're for it and you're doing it and you're getting it, or you're against it. So why do you think it seems that some people are upset at the Biden administration for forgiving over, and I did my research this afternoon, forgiving over $146 billion in student debt for 4 million Americans? That's the stat as of this afternoon. Why do you think people are upset about that? That should be a good thing.
It should be. I think we are a me society, and in a me society, I'm all for things if it benefits me. If it does not benefit me, I don't see the value in it. And I can later tell you why, of course, I think it's valuable when it doesn't benefit me. But we just are a me society. We want it to be for me. So what is he doing? He did that for me,
Okay.
but he didn't do that for me. And so I need something that I can benefit for. And I've heard people say, and I think it's unfortunate, but I've heard people say, well, I followed the rules. I followed the
Yeah.
rules. And so
I've seen those comments.
you didn't follow the rules. And because you didn't follow the rules, you shouldn't. I followed the rules. And I asked someone just recently, I said, well, what was the rule? Tell me what the rule was. Well, I paid my debt off on time. I said, but you could afford to, because if you could have. And this person said, well, other people get loans and they live lavish lifestyles. When I was in college, they take that refund check and they go shopping. I'm like, yeah, they got some cross colors and some used jeans. That's about it, right?
Excuse me, I got a boom box. I got a boom box. Excuse me, I got a boom
Right.
box. in grad school.
But I don't know, I'm not running to, and I know I don't know everyone, but I'm not running to anyone who took a refund check and went and bought a Porsche, okay? Or
right, or a Louis Vuitton purse or anything like that. Right.
And if they bought a Louis, they still have it, and they spent all that refund check on that Louis. Just know that.
Right.
You know, and okay. most they went shopping. They went to, you know, shopping and got them a little something for the party on Saturday night.
And let's be clear, the student loan was so that you could use some of that money to pay your rent for your college apartment, to go to Kroger and get groceries. Like, we had to still live off of that money. At least in grad school, I did.
Absolutely. It was made for that. And part of living is to actually go buy clothes. That's part of living. Like, we want you to upgrade your clothes.
Right. So,
absolutely.
Yeah. So it wasn't a crime that that I needed an efficient musical device to play music while I studied and typed my papers.
Exactly. It helped with your self-care. That's what we call it nowadays. It helped with your self-care.
Right. So what happened to me is initially when President Biden introduced the public service loan forgiveness program, I don't know if I wasn't paying attention or I didn't know that it was anything that was possible for me. I didn't get on it right away. And it was a coworker who, just in casual conversation, said that she was submitting her paperwork to HR. And I was like, oh, you really doing that? Is that for real? And she was like, yeah, you need to submit your paperwork. And this was probably at some point in 2021. Okay. And I was just like, oh, okay. So I submitted my paperwork to my HR department, not really thinking anything about it because, again, you know, I felt that, like, when I look back on my thought processing back then, I felt it was kind of like a lottery kind of thing. Like, you play the number hoping to win the Powerball. And it's just kind of like, what are the odds? What are the odds that you put in these numbers and you happen to win? Like, right. So right. It was just kind of like, oh, is that for real? Like, he really, like, forgiving people student loans. So I went on ahead and turned in my paperwork to HR, got my paperwork back, and proceeded to the next step. All the while, I'm still in full doubt mode. Like, okay, you know, like, I'm just turning this in. We'll see. But I really didn't think anything was going to come of it. And then one day, I talked to you, and you were like, what's up with your student loan forgiveness application? And I probably said something like, oh, I haven't heard back from them people. Like, I don't even know what's going on. And you were like, check it. This is what you need to do. And the moment that we had that conversation, I did what you told me to do. And it was all on from there. It was just like, boom, like, this really may be possible for me. This really may happen for me. Like, I'm making progress in this application process, and it's looking like I can see the light at the end of the tunnel. And last spring in 2023, the light was shining on me, and my student loans from grad school were 110% forgiven by the Joe Biden administration.
Yes.
Why do you think people are doubting that this really is true and that they could be one of the 4 million Americans who to date have gotten their loans forgiven? Why do you think people are so doubtful of this? Just like I was. Why do you think that is?
I think that one reason people are doubtful is because we watch it on the news, and it's just like, it's a bad comparison, but it's just like crimes that happen. Until it happens in your neighborhood, you don't really think it exists. You know, being in education, until a school shooting happens at your school, it's irrelevant to you. You don't pay attention to it. You don't pay attention. You know, you hear it on the news, people giving you like, I don't qualify. Oh, it doesn't happen to me. And then you start skeptic and you say, well, what if they ask me for the money back? Well, what, you know, I won't have the money to pay back. And then,
well, you know, to be honest with you, I printed off, I think I got a letter in the mail and I got a letter in email. Either way, I still have my letter that says that my student loans were forgiven. And I two things. I want to frame it because it's like a miracle. I want to frame it and hang it up on a wall somewhere. But I'm also keeping it because a little voice in the back of my head is feeling like the shoe is going to drop. And they're going some kind of way that Congress, that Senate, whatever they're doing in D.C. are going to try to retract all of this and put us back in a position where our student loans are back under our Social Security numbers.
Right. And what I'll say this, first of all, and for people listening, I want them to understand what you owe is not what you took out. You paid what you took out.
For sure.
It's so damaging the way the interest system is set up for student loans that most people have already paid the money. So it's like I've run into people and doing this work that took out $30,000. They now owe $70,000.
So is that why they're using the calculation of 10 years, that if you've paid on the loan successfully for 10 years, you will get approved for some type of forgiveness at some percentage point, even if it's not 100%?
So that, no, not necessarily, because they're two different programs. The one that you did requires you to do work in a nonprofit. There's another one by 20 years. So sure enough, by 20 years, you've paid that loan. And there are some that have not paid anything because they've been in a forbearance. And so you have those people and they say, well, they've not paid anything because they've been in a forbearance. But they're the outliers. And so those individuals have to have paid 20 years or 25 for grad loans or 25 for Parent Plus. And so part of yours is you've been doing this service and the work you do. You know, you've been going to, and kind of like Clinton's program required a certain type of work. Where this one is saying, point in 2024, if you are walking up in anybody's nonprofit, you are doing a yeoman's job, as my mother would say. I don't know why yeoman's work, but you're doing a yeoman's job. If you're walking up in the Salvation Army, public education, universities, you know, social work, those are just jobs that are underpaid and underfunded. And so you, 10 years, we're going to have to help you at some point.
Right, and that
provides you, makes you become a better citizen. And that's the thing that I tell people when they're talking about, I didn't get mine paid back. Guess what? If I pay my loans back and I'm able to buy a house next door to you, and it's nothing against people who rent homes, I can now live at home longer and make the neighborhood a more vibrant neighborhood. From
the interest rates on those student loans were absolutely insane. When you look at what my loan was originally for grad school, and what the Biden administration had to forgive, it doubled. Oh, like, the interest rates were almost predatory.
And they were. Well, not only the interest rates of being predatory, but think about it. My daughters are 19 right now. They can't rent a car. They can't get a hotel room. They can't get an Airbnb. But they could have gotten $40,000 each in student debt this year.
Yeah.
But they can't go get a hotel. They can't go and get a hotel room for $200.
Right. Because that's crazy.
So it's a whole predatory, it's a predatory system, and it exists so that people can be held back from going to get this education.
Do you think that we ever will evolve into a society, an American society, where one can get an associate's for free or a bachelor's for free at a public community college or a public accredited four-year college or university? Do you think that we'll ever get to that point?
I hope and pray we will, but I will say to everyone listening that elections matter. So if it's not important to the person who's in office, it's not going to matter.
Right. And yeah.
So I hope that we will one day. And I know the Michigan governor is working on things that will make community, because community, I won't even get on the line of how much community college costs, because we took community college classes last summer and they're extremely high for the average person too. But I think that it depends on who we have in office to make those decisions, because when you have someone, and I always say my running joke is I love, 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 love Barack Obama.
Mm-hmm.
He was my president.
Mm-hmm.
But I really love Joe Biden. Uncle Joe is really my president now.
I know. I call him Uncle Joe. I call him Uncle Joe. Uncle, I do.
No. Because Barack Obama did great things, and I really love it. But when you look at the middle class, the student loan debt has lifted up the middle class. It's really lifting those of us who considered us to be ourselves to be middle class. It's lifting us to a point where we can do different things. We can now pay for the roof on our house. We can now pay our houses off. We can, you know, fund our children's education. We're gap parents, gap folks, where we're between the kids and the grandkids, so we can take our elderly parents on vacation. That's all based on this debt being gone.
I wish I had a church organist right now, because the way you just crescendoed that statement, you needed an organ, a Baptist Black church organ playing behind you.
About how much it really, I mean, I've heard so many stories. I have my own stories. Me and my husband mm-hmm. got our loans. Me and John got our loans forgiven. But I've heard stories about people who've literally said to me, this isn't my debt. And I'm like, whose debt is it? They're like, it's my mom made me take out student loans to help the household because she couldn't afford it.
Whoa, what?
And so that person is now responsible for paying back this debt. She had a scholarship, but back in, you know, the 90s and all, they didn't do the paperwork quite as well. So mm-hmm. she take out the scholarship money and send it back to her mother.
What? That sounds like stories I've heard of parents who got bills put in their children's names.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, what 60, I've run into some of our senior citizens who have loans, who, you know, went back to school after they got divorced from a spouse, or after they were able to go back to school and pay for it, but they took out loans and they paid a little bit, and they now are 65 years old with $50,000 in debt.
That is sad.
So Uncle Joe is like is moving mountains on people.
Yeah. And you know, I had said on a post that I had done recently the importance of trying to live financially responsible to the best of your ability, because the less debt you have, whether it's student loan, a credit card, or what have you, the less debt you have, the less emotional stress you have. It's nothing like having your phone to start ringing at 8 o'clock in the morning and it's bill collectors. Like, that's stress. That's anxiety. That's not a cool way to live.
Right.
You know, so Joe, Uncle, like Kamala said, we did it, Joe. We did it. Like, Uncle right. Joe did this for us so that we could have less stress.
Right.
So we could live a more anxiety-free lifestyle. It's not about getting out here and just balling. It's about just simply being given the opportunity to have peace. And sometimes it's just that basic.
Exactly. And what's worse is not only having a bill collector call you about your loans, but paying $300 and seeing the bill go down by 10.
I know. I remember those days.
Like, what? No, I remember. I'm going to tell you. This is a story that I will forever remember. This is why if I ever see Uncle Joe, I'm going to tell him the story. When I finished law school in 2002, got married here, I remember sitting in front of, for all my folks who are from Detroit, they'll know. I was at Livernois and 8 Mile, sitting in front of the post office. I had gone
in
and I opened up, maybe I went in to pick up the mail or something, but I opened up a letter. And it said my student loans were going to be $500 a month. And I was in tears.
Mm.
I'm not gonna pay that. I think I was finished with law school, but I had gone. I worked at the prosecutor's office, and then I went back to education. I always say because I enjoyed the bar exam a couple times, but that's another story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I did pass the bar exam, Joe. So let the record reflect. But yes. Being in tears, sitting there, like, I can never afford to pay $500 a month.
I think mine was set up, it was like, I was supposed to pay like $300 or something. It was like some crazy number that I was just like, what?
Right, and I don't think people realize the stresses that exist when you do that. Now, if you're crying over paying that, you know, that Porsche payment when it gets a little tight, it's one thing. But when you're crying over something that is going to substantially impact your livelihood, that's a whole type of stress.
Right. And to think whether you have graduated from law school, whether you've graduated from school of social work, whether you've graduated from medical school, no one leaves grad school or undergrad. That first job post degree is not the job that's going to give you the lifestyle that you're dreaming of. You know, you're just getting your foot in the door. And so the salary is going to reflect that, and you're not going to be in a position to comfortably pay $300, $500, or $800 a month with that first postgraduate job, unless you're what's the guy that owns Bedrock and all of that, Dan Gilbert, unless you're a prodigy of Dan Gilbert or something like that, you're not going to be able to do that with that first job post degree. So it is very shocking to get those letters and have that expectation of paying that back. At least it was, you know, back in the 90s and the early 2000s, which is the timeline that we're speaking on. So hopefully we'll continue to have forward progress in this area. Just real quick, where can those that are curious or those that are determined, where can they go to start their own loan forgiveness process? Where do they go?
Well, studentaid.gov is the main place to start. Studentaid.gov has everyone's loans, and people get confused between servicers versus what I call the grand hoopla is studentaid.gov. They have everything. But I would start there. It's so much stuff on the internet, and some of it is obviously true. Some of it is obviously false.
Okay.
Studentaid.gov has all of that information. And there's some basic things. There's some basic things. If you've been in public service for a nonprofit since October of 07, your loans can be forgiven, period. Mm-hmm. As my mama would say back in the day, period, point blank.
Okay.
So they can be. And it's going to be a little bit of work on your part. But I tell everyone that I talk to, if you owe $200,000 in loans and it takes you 4 hours, unless you out here making $50,000 an hour, I think you have time to do this.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yes.
And so studentaid.gov has it. If you go on Facebook, there are a lot of posts about it. There's a group on Facebook that's been invaluable. I don't even know if they're accepting people still, but they have real good moderators that cut off the information. And if you're not in public service, studentaid.gov for the income-driven repayment plan waiver, it's out there now every other week. Uncle Joe is introducing something new. He has yet to call me and tell me what he introduced. What he's introducing next? I have tried to say Uncle
Joe. right, yeah.
But paying attention to the news, and because the news is always talking about what's coming out next and whether or not people qualify for it. But it's all out there. You know, think about it. 30 years ago, we didn't have the internet to go look.
No.
Look, you couldn't even look in an encyclopedia, right? Remember you said encyclopedias?
Yes.
Were as student loan. But anyway, you couldn't, you know, now it's out there. And it's just a matter of digging a little deeper and taking some time. And I told people, if you're not sure and you have some personal business time or some vacation time, this is worth taking an entire day off of your work to sit there and do the research so that you can get it done. Because I know of hundreds of people, and I've helped hundreds of people get to the finish line.
Definitely.
It absolutely does work. In education that has loans anymore who's worked for 20 years. None.
And you quoted your mom, period, point blank. I'm going to quote my father, follow up, follow up, follow up. Because for me, that was the key. And you planted that seed. Follow up with those people. Yep. Call them. Email them. Once you get all of your paperwork turned in and you got that train chugging down that track and it's been 4 weeks, it's been 6 weeks, it's been 8 weeks, and you haven't heard back from them, follow up, follow up, follow up.
Absolutely, absolutely. And follow different ways. Send a chat, give her a call, sit on that phone, do what you have to do, submit the paperwork again. I have run into a lot of people, Jen, that's funny too. They'll say to me, well, I submitted my paperwork, I didn't hear anything.
Mm-hmm.
That's all you're gonna do? Like, you just gonna submit anything? So I have to walk them through, look at your account, see if they credited you. Because what I've learned with this process is they're dealing with so many people that they don't have time to follow up. So if your EIN number is wrong, they're not following up. It's just wrong.
Well, that was my thing. When I talked to you, I hadn't heard from the people in I don't know how long. And you were like, Jen, do you have an account set up with the people to go in and even look at where you are in the process? And I was like, account set up with the people? Where? What? So it was just a matter of me going onto the website and creating a username and a password. And I was able to clearly see where I was in the process and had contact information to follow up and reach out to them in case they needed a piece of documentation, in case they needed my social security number again because it got transposed differently or something. You know, you just never know. So you need to follow up and start with setting up an account to get in touch with the people.
And I've done several webinars, and when I see people on there, sometimes I see people on there like, what are you doing on this webinar? You should know better. And so I had a couple people that I will remain nameless. And I'm like, let me walk you through this. Three or four touches. They were at 120, which is the number you need to get your loans forgiven. And they're just waiting now for them to be wiped out. Wow. But you have to follow up. You have to send a chat. You have to contact them. You have to make that follow up because they're dealing with thousands of people across the country.
Yes, yes. And I can say that when I was chatting, when I was actually talking to a human being on the phone, when I was receiving emails, did not have a bad experience whatsoever. No one was ever rude. No one was ever impatient. No one ever made me feel belittled or anything like that. So the government, they really trained the people well. So it will be as pleasant of an experience as it can be if you do have to reach out to them and have a conversation.
Right, right. And if you haven't, so looking at the public service one, if you've not turned in all your paperwork, I'm not sure what you're waiting for. A lot of people that I've encountered say, well, it's going to be too hard for me to get Ferndale. So I'm just not going to get that one. I'm like, this is a lottery ticket win, people. I don't care if I have to roll up to every school district, every place that I have, worked. I'm going to go there to get these winning lottery tickets.
Yeah. And HR, human resource departments, majority of them should understand that this is, and you explained to me, if I'm correct or wrong, that this is a legally binding type of process that they have to help their employers with. So when you ask them to fill out that paperwork, they know that they legally are obligated to complete it, correct or no?
Absolutely. But yes, they are. It's a federal form. They are legally obligated to complete it. But we always know that there are errors and issues. And so some of that, while they're legally obligated to complete it, you know, we have people who forget, it's in their desk, they don't return it, they don't hit that email. So you should follow up.
But that goes back to the follow-up. Yeah.
Exactly. Follow up with them.
Yes. Okay, great. Okay, well, Kia, this was a great conversation. Thank you so much for being a guest on my podcast. Every guest that comes to Breaking Bread with Jen actually breaks bread with me. So with that being said, what is your favorite entree?
Oh my gosh, let me see. I'm a foodie, so I like a lot of entrees. Let me think.
Oh yeah, because we went to breakfast. My listeners, we went to breakfast a couple of weeks back and basically ordered the whole menu. We got French toast, sausage. We were all eating off of each other's plates.
Right. I'm like, really, yeah. Honestly, there's not a food that I there are very few foods I can tell you quicker what I don't like than what I do, okay?
I like
a lot of stuff. I like just about everything.
So if you had the last supper, what would you want for your last supper?
For my last supper, I would probably want, let me see. Oh my gosh. So I'll just say something easy because something easy. If I had a last supper, maybe something like fish and chips, like something just kind of
easy comfort, and basic. Some comfort food. Some right, comfort like, food. Okay.
Now, of course, if I did Mama Southern fried fish would be like the best, but you know, like, yeah. But I could take a good old like fish from a, you know, like a regular fish, like a white fish too.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you once again for being on my podcast. This information that we've shared with my listeners is invaluable, and I hope that you all follow up and follow through if anything on this podcast was beneficial to you. And remember, Acts 20:35, it is always better to give than it is to receive. Make sure that you follow Breaking Bread with Jen on social media. We can be found on Instagram and on Facebook. Take care. Bye. That was an incredible episode. Hopefully you enjoyed it as much as I enjoyed it talking to Kia B. Hagans. Hopefully breaking the chains, the promise of student loan forgiveness will help you move forward to financial freedom. Remember to follow Breaking Bread with Jen on social media. We are Breaking Bread with Jen Podcast on Facebook, and we are Breaking Bread _podcast on Instagram. Make sure that you follow so you can stay on top of every new episode that drops, because every episode that drops is straight fire. All right, take care. Bye-bye. Until next time.